6. Marcy stopped on the image of the monster. It was evening. People chatted softly around her in the dining car, and the train rolled around a picturesque bend, but for a moment she was transfixed by that image. A sketch of violent, rough lines that somehow conveyed a terrible dread. Most of the pages contained in the stack Vendel had delivered contained transcripts of questions answered, or more often not answered, by the wounded Chandra. This was different. A wild sketch using two colors of pencil to depict a terrible visage. A burning red face, a distorted mouth, horns and spikes streaking out along the rim. But black eyes, drawn like voids on the red skin. It looked like a childhood terror ripped right out of a nightmare. The bottom of the page had a caption. Rilleur's sketch of creature described on 87342. Yesterday. The next page was an interview. Vendel, describe to us again the thing you saw. Rilleur, the beast. Vendel, yes, the beast. It guarded the bracers? Rilleur, no, no! It was before. Fallen from the sky. Vendel, the sky? Rilleur, the darkness above. It is of the void. It has no eyes. It looks at me. It's looking at me now. Further questioning was delayed for an hour as Rilleur whimpered in the corner, inconsolable. When he became responsive again, he drew this sketch without prompting, muttering about the thing he had seen. Something is wrong with the eyes of the creature. Perhaps spikes? Spikes. Marcy pulled her purse from under the table, digging into it as the couple at the table behind her laughed loudly, calling for more wine. Marcy pushed aside the two-shot pistol she had tucked inside and took out a thin book, a copy of the one that Iron Eyes had given to Waxillium. Inside it she found the description she wanted, words written by the Lord Mistborn, Lestiborn. So far as I've been able to figure out, hemallergy can create practically anything by rewriting its spiritual aspect. But hell, even the Lord Ruler had trouble getting it right. His Kolos were great soldiers. I mean, they could eat dirt and stuff to stay alive. But they basically spent all day killing each other on a whim, and resented no longer being human. The Chandra are better, but they turn to piles of goop if they don't have spikes, and they can't reproduce on their own. I guess what I'm saying is that you shouldn't experiment too much with this aspect of hemallergy. It's basically useless. There are a million ways to mess up for every one way there is to get a good result. Stick to transferring powers and you'll be better off. Trust me. It was so odd to read the Lord Mistborn's words and have them sound so casual. This was the survivor of the flames, the governor who had ruled mankind in benevolence for a century, guiding them on the difficult path to rebuild civilization. He sounded so normal. He even admitted in one section to having Breeze, counselor of the gods, write most of his speeches for him. So all of the famous words, quotes, and inscriptions attributed to the Lord Mistborn were fabrications. Not that he was a fool. No, the book was full of insight. Disturbing insight. The Lord Mistborn advocated gathering the Metalborn who were elderly or terminally ill, then asking them to sacrifice themselves to make these spikes, which could in turn be used to create individuals of great power. He made a good argument in the book. It wouldn't have been so disturbing if it had been easy to dismiss. She studied the descriptions of hemallergic experiments in the book, trying to ignore the loud couple behind her. Could this drawing be of a new kind of hemallergic monster, like those Wax had encountered under Elendel? Designed by the Set, or perhaps the result of a failed experiment? Or was this instead related to the continually ephemeral Trell, the god with an unknown metal? She eventually put them aside and focused on her primary task. How to find Rilleur's spike. He'd been wounded in some kind of explosion that had ripped off part of his body, and he'd been forced to flee, leaving the flesh and the spike behind. Chandra flesh remained in its human-like state once cut free of the body, so those cleaning up after the explosion would have simply disposed of it, right? She needed to see if they'd created some kind of mass grave for people killed in that explosion. Of course, if the set knew what to look for in a Chondra's corpse, they might have recovered the spike. The pictures, and the possibility they were experimenting with hemallergy, made that more plausible. So that was another potential lead. And was that Wayne's voice? Marcy turned to look at the laughing couple behind her. Sure enough, Wayne had joined them and was chatting amicably with the drunk pair who wore fine evening attire. Wayne, as usual, was in his rough trousers and suspenders. Duster hung on the peg beside the table. He saw Marcy and grinned, drinking a cup of the couple's wine before bidding them farewell. The train hit a sharp bump, causing plates to rattle on tables as Wax slid into the seat across from Marcy, his face full of grin. "Mooching wine?" Marcy asked.
"Nah," he said. "They're drinking bubbly. Can barely stand the stuff. I'm mooching accents. Those folks, they're from New Saren. Got to get a feel for how people talk there."
"Ah, you do realize it's proper to remove your hat indoors, correct?"
"Sure do."
He tipped his hat at her, then leaned back in his chair and somehow got his booted feet up on the small table.
"What are you doing in here?" he asked.
"The dining car?" Marcy asked. "I just wanted a place to spread out."
"Wax rented us out an entire train car, woman," Wayne said, pointing at a passing waiter, then pointing at his mouth and making a tipping motion. "We've got like 6 rooms or something, all to ourselves."
"Maybe I simply wanted to be around people."
"And we ain't people?"
"That is subject to some dispute in your case."
He grinned, then winked at her as the waiter finally stepped over.
"You wanted," the waiter began.
"Liquor," Wayne said.
"Would you care to be a little more specific, sir?"
"Lots of liquor."
The waiter sighed, then glanced at Marcy, and she shook her head.
"Nothing for me."
He moved off to obey.
"No bubbly,"
Wayne shouted after him, earning him more than one glare from the car's other occupants. He then turned to eye Marcy.
"So, gonna answer my question? What are you hiding from, Marcy?"
She sat for a moment, feeling the rhythmic rattle of the train's motion.
"Does it ever bother you to be in his shadow, Wayne?"
"Who? Wax? I mean, he's been putting on weight, but he's not that fat yet, is he?"
He grinned, though that faded when she didn't smile back. And, in an uncharacteristic moment of solemnity, he slid his boots off the table and rested one elbow on it instead, leaning toward her.
"Nah," he said after some thought. "Nah, it doesn't. But I don't care much if people look at me or not. Sometimes my life is easier if they ain't looking at me, you know? I like listening."
He eyed her.
"You saw that he thought you couldn't do this on your own?"
"No," she said. "But I don't know, Wayne. I studied law in the first place, studied famous law keepers, because I wanted to become something others thought I couldn't. I got the job at the precinct and thought I'd accomplished something. But Aradel later admitted he was first interested in hiring me because he wanted someone who could get close to and keep an eye on Waxillium. We both know that Chondra wanted him on this mission, and they arranged the meeting with me to try to hook him. At the precinct, when I accomplish something, everyone assumes I had Waxillium's help. Sometimes it's like I'm no more than an appendage."
"You're not that at all, Marcy," Wayne said. "You're important. You help out a lot. Plus you smell nice, and not all bloody and stuff."
"Great. I have no idea what you just said."
"Appendages don't smell nice," Wayne said, "and they're kind of gross. I caught one out of a fella once."
"You mean an appendix?"
"Sure."
He hesitated.
"Not the same thing."
"Right. Thought you was making a metaphor, since people don't need one of those and all."
Marcy sighed, leaning back and rubbing her eyes with the heels of her hands. Why was she discussing this with Wayne again?
"I understand," he said. "I know what you're feeling, Mara. Wax, he's kind of overwhelming, eh?"
"It's hard to fault him," Marcy said. "He's effective, and I don't think he even knows that he's being overbearing. He fixes things. Why should I be upset about that?
Rust Swain, I studied his life, admiring what he did. I should feel lucky to be part of it. And I do, mostly.
Wayne nodded. But you want to be your own person.
Exactly.
Nobody's forcing you to stay with us, Wayne noted. As I recall, Wax spent a lot of effort at first trying to keep you from always getting involved.
I know. Well, this once I was thinking for a time that I might be able to do something important on my own.
She took a deep breath, then let it out.
It's stupid, I know, but it still feels frustrating. We'll do all this work, find that spike, and get back to the Chondra, then they'll thank Waxillium.
Wayne nodded thoughtfully.
I knew this fellow once, he said, leaning back again, his feet on the table. Who thought it would be a good idea to take people hunting? City folk, you know, who ain't never seen an animal larger than a rat who ate too much. Out in the roughs, we got lions. Fierce things with lots of teeth and...
I know what a lion is, Wayne.
Right. Well, Chip, that's his name. He got some broadsheets printed up, but borrowed some notes from his girl in order to do it. And so she thought she should get a piece of the money once he got people to pay for this trip. Well, the first money came in, and they got in a fight, and she ended up stabbing him right in the holster, if you know what I mean. So he stumbles out into the street, all bleeding, and that's where the constables found him and told him you can't be killing no lions. There's a law about it, see, as they're some kind of noble natural treasure or some such. Anyway, they took Chip and stuffed him in jail where they slammed the bars, by accident, on his rusted fingers. Broke his hand up right good, and he can't bend the tips of his fingers no more.
His drink arrived, a bottle of whiskey and a small cup. He took it, telling the waiter to charge Waxillium, then poured some and settled back.
"Is that the end?" Marcy asked.
"What?" Wayne said. "You want more to happen to the poor fellow? Right sadistic of you, Marcy, right sadistic."
"I didn't mean—" She took a breath. "Did that have any relevance to the situation I'm in?"
"Not really," Wayne said, taking a drink, then removing a little wooden box from his pocket and getting out a ball of gum. But I tell you, Chip, he has it really bad. Whenever I'm thinking my life is miserable, I remember him and tell myself, well, Wayne, at least you ain't a broke, dickless fella what can't even pick his own nose properly, and I feels better.
He winked at her, popped the gum in his mouth, then slipped away from the table. He waved to Milan, who was wearing a fine lace gown and oversized hat. A normal woman would have needed quite the corset to pull off the outfit, but the Chondra had probably just sculpted her body to fit, which was horribly unfair. Marcy stared at the notes. Wayne had left her feeling confused, which was not unusual, but perhaps there was wisdom in what he said. She dug back into the research, but it wasn't too long before she started to droop. It was getting late, the sun having fully set outside, and they wouldn't arrive for another few hours, so she packed up the stack of pages inside their large folder. As she did, something slipped out of the folder. Marcy frowned, holding it up. A small cloth pouch. Opening it revealed a small Pathian earring and a note. Just in case, Waxillium. She yawned, tucking it away, and pushed out of the dining car. The private car Waxillium had hired for them was two cars back at the tail end of the train. She held tight to the sheets as she stepped onto the open-air platform between cars, wind whipping at her. A short railman stood there and eyed her as she crossed to the next car. He didn't say anything this time, though last time he'd tried to encourage her not to move between cars, insisting that he'd bring her food if she wished. The next car over was first class with a row of private rooms on one side. Marcy passed electric lights glowing on the walls as she crossed the car. Last time she'd been on a train, those had been gas with bright, steady mantles. She liked progress, but these seemed much less reliable. They'd waver when the train slowed, for example. She crossed to the final car, then passed her own room and walked toward the room where Waxillium and Steris had taken dinner, to check on them. Both were still there, surprisingly. Waxillium she had expected, but late nights were not Steris's thing. Marcy slid open the door, peeking in.
Waxillium?
The man knelt on the floor, his seat covered in ledgers and sheets of paper. Eyes intent on one of them, he held up his hand toward her in a quieting gesture as she started to ask what he was doing. Marcy frowned.
Why?
Aha! Waxillium proclaimed, standing up. I found it!
What? Steris said. Where?
Tips.
I looked in Tips.
One of the dock workers turned the request in late,
Waxillium said, grabbing a sheet and spinning it toward Steris. He tipped a dock boy 4 clips to run a message for him and asked for reimbursement. Dockmaster gave it to him and filed a note, but he wrote the 4 like a 3 and the accountants recorded it that way.
Steris looked it over with wide eyes.
You bastard,
she said, causing Marcy to blink. She'd never heard language like that from Steris.
How did you figure this out?
Waxillium grinned, folding his arms.
Wayne would say it's because I'm brilliant.
Wayne has the mental capacity of a fruit fly, Steris said. In comparison to him, anyone is brilliant.
She trailed off, noticing Marcy for the first time. She blinked, and her expression became more reserved.
Marcy, welcome. Would you like to sit?
On what? Marcy asked. Every surface was covered in ledgers and pages.
The luggage rack? Are those house finances?
I found a lost clip, Waxillium said. The last one, I should add, which gives me 2 for the evening, while Steris found 1.
Marcy stared at Steris, who started clearing a place for her to sit. She looked to Waxillium, who stood beaming with the sheet in his hand, looking it over again as if it were some lost metal he'd rescued from a labyrinth.
A lost clip, Marcy said. Great. Maybe you can find something in these.
She held up the pages Vendel had given her. I'm heading to bed for a few hours.
Hmm?
Waxillium said.
Oh, sure. Thanks.
He set down the page with some reluctance, taking the folder.
Be sure to look at the drawings of monsters,
Marcy said, yawning.
Oh, and this was in there.
She tossed him the pouch with the earring and walked back into the hallway. She walked toward her room, feeling the train slow once more. Another town? Or were there sheep crossing the tracks again? They were supposed to be getting into the part of the route that was the prettiest. Too bad it would be so dark out. She walked back to her door, first of those in their car, and glanced out the front window toward the rest of the train, which she was surprised to see moving off into the distance. She gaped for a moment, and then the door at the other end of the car burst open. The man standing on the platform beyond leveled a gun down the corridor and fired. 7.
Well, I think you showed a real talent for this, Lord Waxillium, as I believe I suggested.
Wax stopped listening to Steris. Train slowing, chugging sounds retreating, door opening. Wax burned steel. Steris continued talking, and he nodded absently, part of him going through the motions as the rest of him came alert. He heard a click and pushed to his left and held it, pushing to the right against the frame of the train car to keep himself from moving. As the bullet passed in the hallway outside, his push, already in place, slammed it sideways into the wall.
Go!
His push had shoved open the door. He dropped the earring, damn that Vendel, and pushed to the right on the train car's metal window frame. This launched him out to the left, streaking into the hallway. He rammed into the wall where he'd pushed the bullet, vindication in hand, and drilled the surprised man at the end of the hallway in the forehead. Marcy clipped off a scream. Steris stuck her head out into the hallway wide-eyed. Not the smartest move, but she'd rarely been in gunfights.
Thanks,
Marcy said. He nodded curtly. Get your sister behind some cover. He slipped past her and stepped out onto the small platform between train cars. Only their car had been unhooked and left to drift. A group of 3 shocked-looking men on horses rode alongside the slowing car.
Horses?
Wax thought.
Really?
By the starlight, which was bright tonight with no clouds and the red rip low on the horizon, he could see they wore vests over their shirts and sturdy trousers. A larger crowd of them galloped alongside the train ahead. This wasn't a specific attack on just his car, but a full-blown armed robbery. That meant he had to be quick. He shoved on the platform beneath him and decreased his weight. The three robbers nearby started firing, but Wax's push flung him into the air above their shots, and his decreased weight meant that the wind resistance pushed him backward onto the train car. He landed, increased his weight, and picked one man off his horse. The remaining bandits took off forward, kicking their horses and chasing after the others, yelling,
"Allomancer! Allomancer!"
Blast, Wax thought, dropping one of them as the other dodged his horse into a stand of trees. He was out of pistol range in a moment and would soon catch his fellows. Wax dropped onto the platform and rushed down the hallway. The room he'd shared with Steris was empty, but he spotted quivering blue lines in the one next door. Maracy had wisely piled everyone into the servants' compartment.
"Robbery,"
Wax said as he threw open the door, startling the servants, Maracy, and Steris. Most of them sat on the floor, though Maracy was by the window peeking out, and Steris was on the built-in seat, remarkably composed.
"Robbers?"
Steris asked.
"Really, Lord Waxillium, must you bring your hobbies with you everywhere we go?"
"They're going after the rest of the train," Wax said, pointing. "The first thieves must have recognized this car as a private one, probably lush with riches to plunder, and so they uncoupled it. But something is wrong."
"Other than people trying to kill us?" Maracy asked. "No," Steris said. "In my experience, that's quite normal."
"What's wrong," Wax said, "is that they're riding horses." The others stared at him.
"Horseback train robberies," Wax said, "are something out of the story magazines. Nobody actually does that. What good does it do to board a moving train, risking your life when you can just stop the vehicle like the Vanishers did?"
"So are bad guys," Maracy said.
"New to this," Wax said, "or they've been reading too much cheap fiction. Either way, they're still going to be dangerous. I can't risk leaving you here in case they come back for you, so keep your heads down and hang on."
"Hang on?" Herb said. "Why?"
Wax ducked back out into the hallway and ran to the back end of the car. After checking out the doorway, he jumped onto the tracks behind the private car, which was finally rolling to a stop. Then he tapped his metal mines and increased his weight. A lot. The gravel sank beneath his feet as his body became increasingly heavy. He gritted his teeth, flared his metal, and pushed. The car lurched in place as if another train had crashed into it. His push sent it rattling along the tracks, and Wax let out his breath. His muscles didn't hurt, but he felt as if he'd slammed into a wall. He released his metal mind, returning his weight to normal, and pushed on the rails to pull himself out of the gravel. He almost lost a boot in the process. He pushed once more against the tracks, sending himself chasing after the moving car. "Not nearly fast enough," he thought as he dropped to the ground and increased his weight again. The car rocked as he shoved it, then he hopped and followed, repeating the process three more times to get it up to speed. Then finally he pushed himself all the way up to it, jamming his shoulder against the back wall and using allomancy on the tracks behind to sustain and increase the momentum. Ground passed behind in a blur, rows and rows of wooden ties, the steel rails with a continuous stream of metal lines that pointed toward Wax's chest. He groaned and moved so his back was against the wall. Still, the pushing threatened to crush him, as he couldn't increase his weight here much or risk ripping up the tracks. They shot past a group of horses with a few youths guarding them, the bandits' extra mounts. Wax raised Vindication and fired a few shots into the air, but the horses were too well trained to spook at the sound. He redoubled his push as he thought he heard gunfire ahead of him. A moment later, his car slammed into the train proper. Wax let go, dropping to the platform, his back aching. The couplers had engaged, however, and the car remained attached to the rest of the train. He peeked into the car, then ducked in, passing the room where the others were hiding. In his own compartment, he dropped Vindication into her holster, then yanked his gun case off the top rack.
"Waxillium,"
Maracy said, slipping into the room.
"You seen Wayne?" Wax asked.
"He was in the dining car a little bit ago."
"He'll be fighting already. If you see him, let him know I'm going to hit the front of the train, then sweep backward."
Wax snapped one Sterion closed, now loaded, then reached for the second.
"Got it,"
Maracy said. She hesitated.
"You're worried?"
"No masks."
"No."
"Robbers wear masks," Wax said.
He clicked the second Sterion closed, then buckled on his gun belt. Vindication, after a reload, went back into his shoulder holster.
"And men who don't wear masks?"
"They don't care if they're seen." He looked over and met her eyes. They're already outlaws and don't have anything to lose. Men like that kill easily. What's more, it's obvious to me that they've never tried a train robbery before. Either they are very, very desperate, or someone put them up to this. She paled. You don't think the attack is a coincidence? If it is, I'll eat Wayne's hat. He eyed the shotgun Renette had given him, then tied on his thigh holster and slipped it in, then hung two of her cord and sphere contraptions from his gun belt. Finally, he reached up and took a rifle bag off the top shelf and tossed it to Marcy. Watch Steris, he said. See if you can find Wayne. Check on the next car or two, but don't worry about advancing farther if you meet resistance. Just hold your ground and protect these people.
Right.
He moved toward the hallway, but as soon as he stepped out, a hail of gunfire drove him back again. He cursed. All it would take was one aluminum bullet, which he couldn't push on, and he'd be dead. He took a deep breath, then glanced out quickly while pushing and counted four bandits on the rear platform of the next car forward. They fired again. He ducked back and watched the blue lines of bullets as they flew, taking chunks of wood paneling off the wall and splintering his doorframe. It didn't appear that any of the bullets were aluminum.
Distraction? Marcy asked.
Yes, please, Wax said, increasing his weight and pushing on the window frame, launching it out the side of the car and against a passing tree. Fire a few times as I leave, then give me a count of 20, followed by a distraction.
Will do.
Wax threw himself out the window. Immediately he fired Vindication downward, burying a bullet in the ground and giving him something to push on to launch himself upward. Marcy fired a few quick shots inside, and hopefully the robbers would assume his shot had been inside as well. Soaring high, wind whipping at his hair and suit coat, he shot a second bullet into the ground, but farther out, and used it to nudge himself to the right, placing him above the train. He didn't let himself touch down, instead using a push on the nails on the train roof to keep him flying forward. He soared over his own car and the one the robbers were in, finally landing on the dining car, which was third from the back. As he turned to face the rear, his mental count hit 20. A second later, he heard a spray of gunfire coming from Marcy. That was his mark. Wax dropped between the dining car and the robber's car. He practically fell on top of one of the robbers, backing out of the second car from the end, which he hadn't expected. Wax leveled his gun, but the surprised man punched him in the gut. Wax grunted, increasing his weight. The platform beneath him strained, but when he shoved the robber with his shoulder, it sent the man tumbling toward the tracks. The robber had kindly left the door open for him, and he had a clean shot at the backs of his fellows at the far end who were focused on Marcy in the last train car beyond. Wax didn't shoot. He just pushed on the metal they were carrying. The men flipped off the rear platform, dropping into the space between cars. One caught the railing. Wax shot him in the arm, then turned, leveling his gun toward the dining car. People cringed inside, hiding under tables, whimpering. Rusts. Without bandanas or identifying marks to watch for, he'd have trouble spotting the bandits. He set up his steel bubble, a faint push away from himself in all directions that excluded his own weapons. It was far from perfect. He'd been shot several times while using it, but it did help. He turned and strode into the second car from the back, the one the robbers had been using, checking for hostiles at each door, his steel bubble rattling doorknobs. First-class passengers were hiding here, and none appeared to be hurt. In Wax's car, Marcy ducked out of the room, carrying one of Wax's favorite hats. She shrugged apologetically at its numerous holes. "If I find Wayne, I'll send him to you," he told her, reaching to his gun belt for a metal vial. He came up with wet fingers, and his belt clinked with broken glass. Damn. The robber who'd slugged him had broken his vials. He hurriedly hopped over the space between cars, entering their private car again. "I need metal," he explained at Marcy's inquisitive look. He stepped up to his room, then hesitated as a hand stuck out of the next room down, holding a small vial. "Steris?" he said, walking to her. She was still sitting on the plush train bench, though her face was paler than before.
"Steel flakes in suspension," she said, wiggling the vial.
"Since when have you carried one of these?" Wax asked, taking it from her.
"Since 6 months ago. I put one into my purse, in case you might need it."
She raised her other hand, displaying two more.
"I carry the other two because I'm neurotic."
He grinned, taking all three. He downed the first one, then nearly choked.
"What the hell is in this?"
Other than steel? Steris asked. Cod liver oil?
He looked at her, gaping.
Whiskey is bad for you, Lord Waxillium. A wife must look out for her husband's health.
He sighed and drank one more, then tucked the last into his gun belt. Stay safe. I'm going to scout the train. He left and threw himself out the end door, pushing on the tracks and launching himself in a high arc upward. The land spread before him, bathed in starlight. The southern end of the basin, approaching the Saren mountain range, was far more varied in geography than the northern portion. Here, hills rolled across the land, which slowly increased in elevation. The Saren River cut a strikingly straight path through the hills, often having carved out gorges and canyons. The train line stayed up higher, hugging the tops of hillsides, though its path required it to cut two or three times across the river on large latticework bridges. The train consisted of 8 passenger cars, several cargo cars, and a dining car. He let himself drop, focusing on a specific car near the front where gunshots sounded. As he landed just behind that car, someone stumbled out onto the platform, holding his face. Armed bank guard, he thought, noting the man's uniform. The train was bringing a payroll shipment inside a courier car, disguised as if carrying a more mundane cargo. What was that scent in the air? Formaldehyde? The guard was gasping, and soon another stumbled out after him. Both fell a moment later to gunfire from inside the courier car. Wax dropped down onto the platform beside the fallen men, checking on them. One was still moving. Wax knelt and moved the man's hand to cover the hole in his shoulder.
"Press hard," he said over the sounds of the thumping track. "I'll be back for you."
The man nodded weakly. Wax took a deep breath and stepped into the courier car, where his eyes immediately started burning. Men moved inside, wearing strange masks and working at a large safe in the center. A half-dozen dead guards lay strewn across the floor of the car. Wax started shooting, flooring several of the robbers, then pushed himself out again, then upward as the others took cover and started firing back. He landed on the car behind the courier car, holstered Vindication, who was out of bullets, and brought out Asterion. He prepared to drop down to try picking off more robbers, but an explosion inside the courier car interrupted him. It was a small blast, as explosions went, but it still left Wax's ears ringing. He winced and dropped to the platform, noticing figures moving in the smoke, stooping beside the safe, removing its contents. Others started firing at him. He ducked to the side, then pushed the door to the courier car closed, blocking the gunfire with a reinforced metal door. He grabbed the wounded guard under his arms and pulled him backward over the small gap between platforms and into the passenger car behind. This was another car with private compartments, though second class, where those rooms had been filled with larger groups. It was currently empty. The passengers, hearing the gunfire in the next car, had fled down the train. He checked each room anyway. Afterward, he propped the wounded man against the wall inside one of the rooms and tied a handkerchief around the wound, pulling it tight.
"Money,"
the guard said.
"They've got the money,"
Wax replied. "Stopping them isn't worth risking any more lives."
"But..."
"I got a good look at several of them," Wax said, "and hopefully so did you. We'll give descriptions, chase them down, set a trap on our terms. Besides, if they leave now, there might be time to help a few of your friends in there." The guard nodded weakly.
"Couldn't stop them. They threw bottles through the windows, and then the doors ripped off. Steel pushers. Pushed into the room. Twisted off their hinges like they were paper."
Wax felt a chill. So the bandits had metal born, too. Wax peeked around the wall back toward the courier car and found the door he'd closed open again. A thin man stood on the platform wearing a long coat and supporting himself on a cane. He gestured, speaking urgently and motioning for another bandit to lumber toward Wax's car, a hulking brute who had to be almost 7 feet tall.
"Wonderful. Get in here,"
Wax said to the guard, pulling open the luggage compartment in the room's floor.
"Keep your head down."
The guard crawled into the compartment, which was cramped and shallow but large enough for a person, even with a few pieces of luggage in it. Wax pulled out both Asterions, crouching in the doorway of the private room. The train continued to rock, going around a bend. The thing hadn't stopped. Did the engineer not know about the attack, or was he hoping to get to the next town?
Rusts. The courier car changed all of Wax's assessments. Maybe this wasn't about him.
But why not just stop the train and raid it in the wilderness?
Too many questions and no time to answer them. He had a bandit to kill. He'd have to jump out and surprise the brute, bring him down quick. If he was the Metalborn, surprise would be... Something bounced down the hallway and came to a rest on the floor beside Wax, just outside the doorway in which he crouched. A small metal cube. He jumped back, fearing an explosive, but nothing happened. What had that been? And then he realized, with a deep, bone-chilling horror, that he was no longer burning metal. There was nothing inside of him to burn. His steel reserves had, somehow, vanished. Marcy fired 3 shots with a rifle, driving the bandits in the next car back under cover.
Impressive, she thought, absently handing the weapon to Steris for reloading.
She'd always used a target rifle before. You took one shot at a time with those, cocking between, but Waxillium's rifle had a full wheel of cartridges that turned on its own like a revolver. Steris handed back the gun and Marcy took aim again, waiting for any bandit bits to peek out. She hid just inside the door to the servants' compartment, and the bandits hadn't made any serious attempts at advancing on her position. Someone said something beside her. Marcy glanced into the room where Druten was speaking. Marcy pulled out one of her wax earplugs.
What? She asked. Are those earplugs? The valet asked. What do they look like? She said, then sighted down the rifle and fired a shot.
Druten shoved his hands over his ears. Indeed, in the small chamber the shot was loud enough that she was annoyed he'd made her remove her earplug.
You carry them with you? Druten asked.
Steris does,
apparently. Marcy had been a little surprised when Steris had pulled out a pair for herself, then, an unconcerned look on her face, handed a pair to Marcy.
So you expected this to happen?
More or less, Marcy said, watching for movement from the bandits. He seemed aghast.
This sort of thing happens often?
Would you say it happens often, Steris? Marcy asked.
Steris said, removing an earplug.
What was that?
Marcy fired a shot, then looked up.
Think I winged that one.
The valet wants to know if this sort of thing happens often to us.
You more than me, Steris said conversationally. But when Lord Waxillium is around, things do tend to pop up.
Things? Druten said. Pop up? This is a rusting train robbery!
Steris regarded the valet with a cool expression.
Didn't you inquire about your prospective master before entering Lord Waxillium's employ?
Well, I mean, I knew he had an interest in the constabulary, like some lords have an interest in the symphony or in civic matters. It seemed odd, but not ungentlemanly. I mean, it's not as if he was involved in the theater.
They've gone quiet over there, Marcy thought, nervously tapping one finger against the rifle barrel. Were they going to try to cross over onto the top of her car again? One of the holes in the ceiling still dripped blood from the previous attempt. To the side, Steris clicked her tongue disapprovingly at Druten's words. He hadn't done his homework, which was a dreadful sin in Steris's eyes. Little could be worse than entering a situation without being thorough.
Is he going to come back? Druten asked. Once he's finished, Steris said.
Finished with what?
Killing the rest of them, hopefully, she said.
Marcy found herself surprised at Steris's bloodthirst. Of course, the woman hadn't been quite the same since her kidnapping 18 months back. It wasn't that Steris acted traumatized, but she'd changed.
They aren't trying to get to us anymore, Druten said. Did they retreat?
Maybe, Marcy said.
Probably not.
Should we go look? Druten asked.
We?
Well, you.
He tugged at his collar.
Gunfights. I had not actually expected gunfights. Aren't the servants usually left out of such extravagances?
Most of the time, Marcy said.
Except when the house blew up, Steris added. Except then. And, you know, Steris said, best not to mention it.
Mention what?
Druten asked.
Don't worry about it,
Marcy said, glaring at Steris. Honestly, if the man couldn't do a little research before taking a job.
Wait,
Druten said, frowning.
What exactly happened to Lord Ladrian's
previous valet.
Motion in the hallway again. Marcy snapped her rifle up, ready to fire. However, the person who moved out into the hallway wasn't one of the bandits, but an older woman in a fine traveling dress. A bandit walked behind her, gun to her head. Marcy shot him right in the forehead. She gaped, shocked at herself, and almost dropped the gun. Fortunately, the remaining bandit, seeing that the ploy hadn't worked, ran out of the car, fleeing toward the front of the train.
Rusts.
Marcy felt sweat trickle down her temple. She'd fired so quickly without even thinking. The poor hostage stood there, blood from the dead man all over her. Marcy knew what that felt like. Yes, she did. Beside her, Druten let out a few oaths that would have made Harmony blush.
What were you thinking?
He demanded of her.
You could have hit the woman!
Statistics say...
Marcy took a deep breath.
Shut up!
Huh?
Shut up!
She stood, holding the gun in nervous hands, and made her way into the next car. The woman had found her husband, alive, fortunately, and was crying in his arms. Marcy stood over the bandit corpse, then looked back out at the roof of her car, where another one lay. She hated this part. A year and a half working with Waxillium hadn't made killing any easier. It was unnerving, and it was such a waste. If you had to shoot a man, society had already failed. Marcy steeled herself and did a quick check of the rooms of the first-class car, determining that the bandits had well and truly retreated. One of the first-class passengers claimed to have experience with a gun, and she handed him the rifle and set him watching to be certain no bandits returned. From there, she went to the dining car, checking on the passengers, calming them. Gunshots came from farther up the train. Waxillium was doing his job. His effective, brutal job. The next car up, fourth from the end, was a second-class car with packed rooms. She checked on the people here, too. Between the two cars, she found four people who had been shot. One was dead, another seriously wounded. So Marcy went to see if Steris had, by chance, brought any bandages or medical equipment. The chances were slim, but this was Steris. Who knew what she had planned for? Marcy passed Druten, who sat morosely on a seat in one of the first-class cabins, obviously wondering how an expert cravat tire had ended up in the middle of a virtual war zone. Steris, however, wasn't in the servants' compartment, nor was she in the one she had been sharing with Waxillium. Increasingly frantic, Marcy searched through the first-class rooms. No Steris. Finally, she thought to ask the man she'd posted on guard.
Her?
He said.
Yes, miss. She went by here a few minutes ago, moving up the train. Should I have stopped her? She seemed very determined about something.
Marcy groaned. Steris must have slipped past while she was checking in the rooms of the second-class car. Frustrated, she took her rifle back and chased after her sister. Wax's metal reserves were gone. Wax knelt, completely stunned. This was impossible. How in Harmony's name? He twisted, discovering that the enormous bandit had stepped into this car. Doors rattled around the man, shaking as if someone were trying violently to get out. Wax ducked into the hallway and lifted his gun, but it was flipped from his fingers by a push. Immediately after, Wax himself was shoved backward by his gun belts. He slammed into the opposite wall of the car, right next to the closed door leading toward the back of the train. He groaned in pain.
How? How had they...
He shook his head, then heaved against the wall, using his breakaway buckles to rip free of his gun belts. He dropped to the floor, leaving his guns in the metal vial stuck to the wall as the brute loped toward him. Wax dodged onto the man's first swing and delivered a punch right into the man's side. It felt like punching a steel wall. He danced backward, but Rusts, it had been years since he'd gotten into a real fist fight, and he was slower than he'd once been. The giant's next right hook caught him as he tried to jab for the face. His vision flashed, and his cheek erupted in pain. The blow shoved him into the side wall.
Rusts. Where was Wayne?
The brute came in again, and Wax dodged to the side, barely, and managed to connect with the man's face. Once, twice, three quick jabs. The brute smiled. Doors still rattled around him. He was a coin shot, obviously, pushing out with a bubble like the one Wax used.
He'd even pressed a little on the metal mine's wax war on his upper arms, which were resistant to allomancy. This man could have ended the fight at any moment by grabbing a bit of metal and shooting it. He preferred the hand-to-hand fight. Indeed, the man raised his fists and nodded to Wax, still grinning, inviting him to come in for another round. To hell with that. Wax turned and slammed his shoulder against a door into an empty second-class compartment and made for the window.
Hey!
The man said behind him.
Hey!
Wax leaped at the window and increased his weight. He hit the window shoulder first, arms covering his face, and smashed through, then barely managed to catch the bottom window frame as he fell outside. Fingers dripping blood from the broken glass, he pulled himself up, stood on the windowsill, and scaled the outside of the train, finally heaving himself onto the roof. Wind rushed around him, and he was shocked to see that he wasn't alone up here. Ahead about four cars, a group of armed men pressed toward the front of the train, bearing something large and seemingly heavy. What in the name of the lost metal was that?
Hey!
The large bandit said again as he climbed the side of the car. Wax sighed, then kicked the man in the face as he tried to pull himself onto the top. The man growled. Wax kicked him again, then stomped on one of his hands. The man glared at Wax, then dropped back down to the window and climbed inside.
You can beat anybody, Wayne always said, so long as you don't let them fight back properly.
Wax moved to the center of the train car. He felt he should be chasing down those men up ahead, but he was unarmed now, and the coin shot below was bound to pester him.
You have what you wanted, he thought at the robbers. Why are you still fighting?
The brute's head appeared a moment later, peeking over the lip of the car's roof near the rear platform, which had a ladder. Wax rushed him, preparing to kick again, but the brute climbed up too quickly. He was holding something. One of Wax's gun belts. Damn! The man grinned, stepping onto the rooftop, pulling Renette's enormous shotgun out and dropping the gun belt. Beneath them, the train shot out of the forest and rolled toward an open bridge rising hundreds of feet above the river below. The brute raised the shotgun as if to fire from the hip.
Excellent.
Wax dove for the rooftop as the brute pulled the trigger, and the massive kick Renette had built into the gun took him entirely by surprise. The weapon ripped out of his fingers, jerking backward and falling down between the cars. The man howled, cradling his hand. Wax tackled him in the chest. The man grunted, stumbling backward, but caught himself before he toppled off the train. Wax didn't care. He was after the gun belt, which had fallen at the man's feet. He snatched it with his fingers still wet with blood. It held Renette's two cord devices, along with a single glorious metal vial. Wax yanked it out, tucking the gun belt into his waistband. However, the vial lurched in his fingers. He snatched it, holding on tightly, but the brute's push sent him backward across the train's roof in a skid. He slipped and fell to his knees, catching the side of the train. The coin shot kept pushing. Wax clung to the rooftop with his left hand, but his right arm, which held the metal vial, strained in its socket. The brute smiled and started walking forward. Each step closer let him push harder. Wax gritted his teeth. The cuts on his fingers were superficial, though they stung like hell, and the blood made his grip slippery. He struggled, trying to pull the vial toward his mouth, but failed. Renette's sphere devices. They hung from the gun belt tucked into his waist. Could he use those? How? Beneath him, the train started across the bridge. The thug advanced on Wax, rolling his shoulder and trying to make a fist despite his broken thumb. Behind the man, something moved on the ladder. A head coming up? Wayne! No! He saw the tip of a gun wave as the person climbed. Wayne wouldn't have a gun. Marcy? Steris appeared at the lip of the roof, wind blowing her hair wildly. She looked from the huge robber to Wax, then seemed to gasp, though the wind was too loud for Wax to hear it. She scrambled up and set herself, crouching on one knee, holding Renette's shotgun. Oh, no!
Steris! He shouted.
The brute spun, noticing her as she set the gun at her shoulder, wide-eyed, dress rippling against her body in the wind. She pulled the trigger. Unsurprisingly, the shot went wild, but it did manage to clip the brute in the arm, spraying blood. The man grunted, releasing his push on Wax. Unfortunately, the enormous kick of that gun, intended to be used to fight allomancers, hurled Steris backward, and right off the side of the train. 8.
Wax leaped off the side of the train and raised the vial to his mouth. Steris toppled below, falling toward the river. He ripped the cork free with his teeth and turned over in the air, sucking down the contents of the vial. Cod liver oil and metal flakes washed into his mouth. Swallowing took a precious moment. Nothing. 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 Power. Wax shouted, flaring steel and pushing on the tracks up above. He shot downward in a blur, slamming into Steris, grabbed her, and pushed on the shotgun that toppled beneath her. It hit the water. They slowed immediately. Water viscosity being what it was, you could push off something sinking. A second later, the shotgun hit the bottom of the churning river, and that left the two of them hanging about 2 feet above the water's surface. A faint, solitary blue line led from Wax to the shotgun. Steris breathed in short, frantic gasps. She clung to him, blinked, and then looked down at the river.
"What is wrong with that gun?" she said.
"It's meant for me to shoot," Wax said, "when my weight is increased to counteract the kick." He looked up toward the disappearing train. It had crossed the river, but now it'd have to slow and chug its way down some switchbacks on a hill on the other side, coming out of the highlands to head on toward New Saren. "Hold this," he told Steris, handing her his gun belt and removing the two spheres. "What were you thinking? I told you to stay back in the other car."
"As a point of fact," she said, "you did not. You told me to stay safe."
"So?"
"So it has been my experience that the safest place in a gunfight is near you, Lord Waxillium."
He grunted. "Hold your breath."
"What? Why should I?"
She yelped as he pushed onto the steel bridge supports nearby, plunging them down into the river. Ice-cold water surrounded them as Wax kept pushing, plunging downward until he reached his gun, easily located by its blue line, settled into the muck on the bottom. Ears throbbing from the pressure, he snatched the gun, replacing it with one of Renette's sphere devices, then pushed. They popped back out of the river, trailing water, and Wax pushed them as high as his anchor would allow and handed Steris the shotgun to hold. From there, he pushed off one of the support beams below, launching them upward and to the side. A push on one from the other direction sent them bounding upward the other way, and he was able to work them toward the top of the bridge. The angle of these pushes had sent them out away from the tracks, unfortunately. When they soared up past the bridge, he needed to sling Renette's other sphere device out, getting it into a small gap between bridge struts. He engaged the hooks so that the push from below, combined with a taut cord in his hand, swung him and Steris in an arc. He landed on the tracks, a soggy Steris in one arm, cord in the other. He could imagine Renette's grin as he told her how well the thing had worked. He disengaged the hooks and yanked the device back into his hand, though he had to wind the cord manually. Steris's teeth chattered audibly, and he glanced at her as he finished winding, expecting to see her frightened and miserable. Instead, despite being dripping wet, she had a stupid grin on her face, eyes alight with excitement. Wax couldn't help smiling himself as he stowed Renette's sphere and tied on his gun belt, then shoved his shotgun into the holster. "Remember, you're not supposed to find things like that fun, Steris. You're supposed to be boring. I have it on good authority from this woman I know."
"A tone-deaf man," Steris said, "can still enjoy a good choir, even if he could never participate."
"Not buying the act, my dear," Wax said. "Not any longer. You just climbed on top of a moving train car and shot a bandit, rescuing your fiancé."
"It behooves a woman," she said, "to show an interest in her husband's hobbies. Though I suppose I should be outraged, as this is the second time you've dunked me in a very short period of time, Lord Waxillium."
"I thought you said the first one wasn't my fault."
"Yes, but this was twice as cold, so it evens out."
He smiled. "You want to wait here, or join me?"
Join you?"
He nodded to the left. Far below, the train hit the end of its switchbacks down the hillside, leveling out to approach the final bend before heading southward. Her eyes opened wider, then she grabbed him in a tight grip. "When we land," he said, "keep your head down and find a place to hide."
"Got it."
He took a deep breath, then launched himself high in a powerful arc through the night air. They sailed across the river, coming down like a bird of prey toward the front of the train. Wax slowed himself and Steris with a careful push on the engine, settling down atop the coal tender. Inside the cab, right in front of them, a bandit held a gun to the engineer's head. Wax let go of Steris, then spun around and pumped the shotgun, popping the expended shells into the air, and pushed on the shells, sending them through the back of the engine cab and right into the bandit's head. She dropped, falling on the engine controls. Wax was nearly thrown off as the train lurched, slowing down. He spun, grabbing Steris by the arm. To his right, the startled engineer grabbed the lever, smoothing out the deceleration. Holding Steris to him, Wax leaped with a short push into the open rear of the engine, where they landed beside the engineer and the dead bandit.
"What are they doing?"
he asked, dropping Steris, then kneeling and taking the dead bandit's pistol.
"They have some device," the engineer said, frantic, pointing. "They're installing it between the coal tender and the first car. Shot my fireman when he tried to defend me, the bastards."
"Where's the next town?"
"Ironstand. We're getting close. Few more minutes."
"Get us there as quickly as you can and call for some surgeons and the local constables the moment we arrive."
The man nodded frantically. Wax closed his eyes and took a deep breath to orient himself.
The final push. Here we go.
Halfway through the train, Marisi had reason to curse Waxillium Ladrian. Well, another reason. She added it to the list. Though she was supposed to be finding Steris, she spent most of her time being mobbed by worried passengers who needed soothing. Apparently the bandits had quickly worked their way through the second and third class cars, shaking people down for what little money they had. The people were terrified, upset, and looking for anyone with a hint of authority to comfort them. Marisi did her best, settling them onto benches, checking to see if any more people were seriously wounded. She helped bandage a young man who had stood up to a bandit, and now bore a shot in the side as a result. He might make it. Passengers had seen Steris come through here. Marisi tried to contain her worry and peeked into the next car in the line. It was deserted, save for one passenger standing calmly at the far end, cane in hand, blocking the passage. Marisi checked the various rooms as she entered, rifle held at the ready, but spotted no bandits. This was the last car before the cargo cars, which, oddly, were at the front of this train. This car's interior showed its share of bullet holes in the woodwork, suggesting Waxillium had been here.
"Sir?"
Marisi asked, hastening to the lone man. He was slender and younger than she'd expected him to be from behind, considering how his posture slumped, and how he relied upon the cane to keep him upright.
"Sir, it's not safe for you here. You should move to the rear cars."
He turned toward her with raised eyebrows.
"I am always inclined to obey the wishes of a pretty woman," he said.
She could see that he kept one hand stiff at his side, fingers closed as if clutching something.
"But what of you, miss? Is there no danger to you?" "I can care for myself,"
Marisi said, noting that the next car in line was crowded with corpses. She felt sick.
"Indeed," the man said. "You look quite capable. Quite capable indeed."
He leaned in.
"Are you more than you appear, perhaps? A metal-born?"
Marisi frowned at the odd question. She'd taken a dose of cadmium, of course, for all the good it would do. Her allomancy was generally something to laugh at. She could slow down time in a bubble around herself, which meant speeding it up for everyone else. A wonderful power if you were bored and waiting for the play to start. But it wasn't of so much use in combat, where you'd be left frozen in place while your enemies could escape or just set themselves up to shoot you when the bubble dropped. True, she could make the bubble fairly large, so she could catch others inside of it, but that would still leave her trapped, and likely with hostiles. The man smiled at her, then abruptly raised his hand, the one that appeared to be clutching something. Marisi started to react, bringing her rifle up. But at that moment the train unexpectedly lurched, slowing as if someone had leaned on the brake. The man cursed, stumbling and slamming into the wall before falling to the floor. Marisi caught herself, but dropped the rifle. She looked at the man, who regarded her with wide eyes before maladroitly stumbling to his feet. One of his legs didn't work right, and hastening out of the train car onto the platform, slamming the door behind him. Marisi stared after him, confused. She'd assumed he was pulling a gun on her, but that hadn't been the case at all. The object had been far too small. She reached for her gun, and beside it on the floor, she was surprised to find a small metal cube with bizarre symbols on it. Gunfire sounded ahead. Marisie tucked the curiosity away and shouldered her rifle, determined to find Waxillium and, hopefully, her stupid sister. Eyes closed, Wax felt the metal burning. That fire, comfortable and familiar. Metal was his soul. Compared to it, the chill of the river was no more than a raindrop on a bonfire. He felt the gun in his fingers, a bandit's gun, unfamiliar to him. Yet he knew it by the lines pointing at its barrel, trigger, levers, the bullets inside. 5 shots left. He could see them, even with his eyes closed.
Go.
He opened his eyes and leaped out of the engine, pushing himself forward in a rush. He passed over the coal tender, then burst into the first cargo car, laden with mail and heaping sacks, and passed through in a tempest. He skidded out onto its rear platform and pushed to either side, launching 2 bandit guards upward and outward, 1 in each direction. The train ran up beside the river here. Trees blurred past on the left, water on the right. Wax launched himself upward onto the top of the 2nd cargo car, noting the bandits with their device here. Another, larger group had gathered atop the next car, the one they'd robbed. Wax fired with cold precision, killing the 3 bandits. He stepped up to the device the engineer had mentioned, which was nothing more than a large case of dynamite and a trigger linked to a clock. Wax ripped the detonator off, tossed it aside, then pushed the entire box away to be sure. It plunged into the river. Something pushed his gun out of his hand. He spun, finding the large bandit from before lumbering toward him across the roof. He'd left a larger group of bandits on the next rooftop over.
You again, Wax thought with a growl, dropping his gun belt, but resting his foot on it to keep it from blowing away.
The man came running toward Wax. With the brute very close, Wax knelt and yanked out Renette's sphere device. The bandit pushed on that, of course, causing the sphere to leap backward to the side. Wax kept a firm hold on the cord, wrapping it with a yank around the bandit's leg. The bandit stared down in confusion. Wax pushed, shoving the sphere into a batch of trees, engaging its hooks.
I believe this is your stop.
The large man suddenly flew off the train, yanked by the cord, which was now hooked to a tree. Wax picked up his gun belt and advanced in the larger group of bandits, wind whipping around him on the rooftop. He was facing down at least 12 of them, and he had no weapon. Fortunately, the group was busy throwing one of their members off the train? Wax blinked in surprise, but that was indeed what they were doing. They tossed one of the bandits overboard. It was the man with the cane who hit the water beside the train with a splash. A group of the others started to follow suit, leaping into the river. One spotted Wax pointing. 6 remaining bandits leveled weapons. Then froze. Wax hesitated, the wind at his back. The men didn't move, didn't flinch, didn't even blink. Wax hopped across to the next car, then took a cork from his pocket, from one of his vials, and tossed it toward the men. It hit some invisible barrier and froze there, hanging in the air. Wax grinned, then dropped down between the cars and pushed into the one the men were standing on. There, he found Marisie standing atop a bunch of suitcases, her shoulders pressed against the train's ceiling, just below the men, so she could engage a speed bubble and freeze them all in place.